Thank you, Michael. Shalom, everybody. I'm Rabbi Glenn, Rabbi Lauren's associate. It's an honor to be part of this second annual conference. And what I'd like to take the next couple minutes and talk with you about is Yeshua's genealogy. You know, those parts of the scripture we just like to skip over or just fly through if we're reading through in a year and we want to be able to say we read the whole thing. And so-and-so begat, so-and-so begat, so-and-so begat, so-and-so begat. Okay, I'm done. Well, lately it seems that tracing one's ancestry is quite the thing to do. There are numerous organizations and websites that are dedicated to helping you with family tree research. Lately I've been seeing ads for Ancestry.com. And some who have traced their lineage have found distant relatives whose accomplishments were considerable. Makes for good bragging rights. Some people made great significant contributions to society. Some maybe even have famous relatives. Now, if you wanted to impress somebody with your ancestry, no doubt you would want to highlight the more illustrious family members of the past, and you might want to omit certain others. You would be proud of the great-grandfather who was the chief rabbi of such and such a city, or the great-grandfather or great-aunt who invented some gadget or widget that made cooking easier, or the late cousin who founded a school or a hospital. You know, I'm proud of the fact that my own half-brother, Doug, is a modern descendant of Maimonides. On the other hand, there are those relatives and ancestors you just as soon leave off your chart. People like the uncle with the strange facial tick, who seems to live in the past and always talks about the glory days, or maybe even the distant relative who was hung for being a horse thief. Well, Yeshua's genealogy represents a key facet of the necessary credentials for his messianic claim. One might expect impeccable ancestral credentials from the Messiah. You know, a high sense of what we would say in Yiddish is yichus, right? Pedigree. And one would think that the Messiah would have the most impressive family history you ever saw, and one might be surprised to find otherwise. So this afternoon, let's take a few minutes and consider Yeshua's genealogical record presented by Matthew. I invite you to look at Matthew chapter 1 with me. And you'll be glad to know that for the sake of time, we're not going to read the genealogy through twice. We're just going to go through once. But we'll take a little time with it. Because, you know, to be honest, don't we tend to want to skip those things or read through really fast? It seems like the genealogies, they don't really inspire. But it's important that we remember that Matthew wrote this gospel, this good news account, at a time where the faith was very much a fledgling movement and facing severe opposition to the legitimacy of the movement and to the legitimacy of Yeshua, Jesus, his claim to be the Messiah. And there were plenty of Jewish religious zealots who were bent on discrediting Yeshua and this movement. If somehow Yeshua's Israeli and specifically Judean ancestry could be, if it wasn't both verifiable and credible, right there, that would have been grounds to dismiss even the possibility that he could be the Messiah. And certainly the movement never would have gotten off the ground. So let's examine this genealogy, a genealogy, I should say, that spans nearly 2,200 years. And we're going to do it in about 15 minutes. How's that? All right, Matthew chapter 1, the book of the genealogy of Yeshua the Messiah, the son of David, the son of Abraham. The very first words of the New Testament. Does it get any more Jewish than that? The very first words of the New Testament, yet to this day, there are people who want to deny the Jewishness of the book. But what we have at the very outset is the assertion of the legal and tribal basis for the claim that Jesus is, in fact, the Messiah. In this one verse, we have three remarkable claims. First, being the confident assertion that Yeshua was and is the Messiah. The second claim that he is legally and rightfully heir to the throne of David, and the fulfillment of the prophecies of 2 Samuel 7 and Isaiah chapter 9, and third, that he is a descendant of Abraham, the progenitor of our people. Now, that might seem insignificant to some people, but in accordance with the Torah, the king of Israel must be an Israeli. Well, it goes on. To Abraham was born Isaac, and to Isaac, Jacob, and to Jacob, Judah and his brothers. That seems straightforward enough, right? And certainly would have been elementary to any first century Jew. It would have also been easy to gloss over, save the fact that in this one verse, we just covered 270 years. Not to mention 49 of the 50 chapters of Genesis. But of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Judah, we have no problems, right? Oh, I think we have some problems. There's the matter of Abraham lying twice about his wife. We have Isaac playing favorites with his children. We have Jacob deceiving his father, Judah. We have Judah conspiring with his brothers to rid themselves of Joseph. Of course, it was Judah who suggested they sell Joseph to the Midianites. That's just great. Now, remember, though, this is a very real human genealogy. Matthew is not setting out to establish some kind of perfection, but what he is setting out to establish is the undeniable Israeli identity of Messiah's human ancestors. And to that extent, there's no problem here. But let's go on. And to Judah were born Perez and Zerah by Tamar. And to Perez was born Hezron, and to Hezron, Ram. Any problem here? Oh, yeah, we've got a whopper here. To Judah, it says, were born Perez and Zerah by Tamar. Now, for those of you who have never made a real intensive study of Genesis, or for those who may have just forgotten, let me point out that Tamar was not Judah's wife. She was his daughter-in-law. How creepy is that? Well, now, granted, Judah didn't know it was his daughter-in-law because she had dressed herself up like a prostitute, so he just thought he was going to a prostitute. Oh, I feel so much better about that. What kind of ancestry is this? But, you know, this too would have been common knowledge to any first century Jewish person. They knew these things. We knew Genesis. Nowadays, many Jewish people don't even read the scriptures, but at that time, Jewish people knew the scriptures, so everybody knew this. Now, Perez, whose name means breach, we have born of an incestuous relationship, but everybody knew it. So apparently that didn't seem to be a problem in terms of the legitimacy of the genealogy. You may be relieved to know that of Hezron, whose name means enclosure, perhaps signifying that the breach had been healed and the damage contained. Of Hezron and Ram means exalted, we have no particular problems. The biblical record says actually very little about their lives, and the way this is going, I'm maybe a little relieved. Let's go on. And to Ram was born Aminadab, and to Aminadab Nashon, and to Nashon Salmon. No problems with any of these individuals, and we're still on track as pertains to the authentic Israeli ancestry of Messiah Yeshua. The same cannot be said, however, of the next group. We will need to consider the next verse a section at a time. And here we go. And to Salmon was born Boaz by Rahab. Yes, that Rahab. The Rahab described in Joshua chapter 2. Wait a minute, Rabbi Glenn, you're telling me that Messiah's ancestry includes a former Gentile prostitute? Yes, it does. I mean, gosh, can you imagine, at some point Rahab obviously married within Israel, but can you imagine being the guy and you got to go tell your mother? Mom, I'd like you to meet my fiance, Rahab. You know, she used to be a prostitute, and wait, Mom, listen. She's given up that way of life, and she's actually joined herself to Israel. She's become one of us. In fact, Mom, she was our point person at Jericho. She saved the lives of our two spies. The scriptures not only commend Rahab for her role in the Jericho encounter, but in both Old and New Testament, she's shown to be an example of how foreigners might join themselves to Israel. Still, did she absolutely have to be included in this genealogy? It wouldn't have been a lot less controversial if Matthew had simply omitted her name. I mean, come on, this is admittedly not exactly the most pristine family lineage here. But it is the line of God's choosing, and the theme running through this is going to become evident in just a few minutes. For now, let's consider other names in this section. And to Boaz was born Obed by Ruth. Now, many people are familiar with the story of Ruth. It has special meaning for Gentiles within the Messianic movement. In Ruth, we read of a Moabite woman who is drawn to and ultimately joins herself to the people of God and to the God of Israel. It's evident that both Boaz and Ruth were righteous individuals. Nevertheless, the fact remains that Ruth was a Moabite, from a people whom God excluded in perpetuity entrance into the assembly of Israel. And it was because of their part in the Midianite attempt at having us cursed through Balaam. You know, Solomon married Moabite women and was condemned by the writer of 1 Kings for it. In Ezra 9 and Nehemiah 13, the Jewish men who had married foreign wives, including Moabite wives, were rebuked and urged to break off those marriages. So how is it that this particular union between an Israeli and a Moabite woman becomes the exception? How can we deem acceptable an ancestry which includes a Moabite woman? Wouldn't this alone negate the genealogy and thus disqualify Yeshua as the Messiah? Well, the answer is no for two very important reasons. First of all, Ruth joined herself to Israel and to Israel's God, thus forsaking the Moabite culture and the Moabite religion. She is considered both by biblical writers and in Jewish tradition as having become a proselyte, a convert to Judaism, and a full-fledged member of the Jewish community. The barring of intermarriage and Moabite participation in Israel's assembly didn't have as much to do with ethnicity as with the issue of maintaining the purity of Israel's worship and faith. Secondly, Ruth was a direct ancestor of King David. So if we're going to nix this genealogy because we have a Moabite woman in it, then we would have to write off King David as being a Jew. And who's going to do that? Clearly, God is trying to communicate something to us through Yeshua's genealogy, but I'm going to keep you waiting just a little bit longer before we take up that grand theme. Let's go on. And to Jesse was born David the king. And to David was born Solomon by her who had been the wife of Uriah. Well, no problem with Jesse. Or David in terms of their national origin. Okay, here is a Judean family from Bethlehem. The problem is that Solomon was born to David by, quote, her who had been the wife of Uriah. Well, her had a name, Bathsheba. And she was a married woman when David set eyes on her. David committed adultery with Bathsheba, got her pregnant, and then conspired to have her husband Uriah killed in order to cover up their affair and to create the illusion that she was a war widow and eligible for him to marry. David committed adultery with Bathsheba, and yet here she is in the genealogy of Messiah. Well, not exactly named. She's referred to as her who had been the wife of Uriah. Does this genealogy seem to be going from bad to worse? As we pointed out earlier, this is a very human genealogy, but consider the implications. Thus far, we've seen in Yeshua's genealogy one ancestor born of an incestuous relationship, two foreign women, one of whom had been a prostitute, the other part of an enemy people forever excluded from the Israeli community. Now we have an adulterous man and woman becoming the parents of Solomon. How can this be? One might justifiably ask, why would God allow such sinful people to be part of Messiah's lineage? Now, David might have fooled the people, but he didn't fool God. When he was confronted by Nathan the prophet, David acknowledged that he had sinned against the Lord, to which Nathan replies, "The Lord has also taken away your sin. You shall not die." Sin? Yes. But also, and more importantly, redemption. In each of these representative members of Yeshua's genealogy, we witness the theme of redemption. The situations themselves may have been difficult, even disastrous, but not one individual, not one circumstance was beyond God's power to redeem, to restore, and from which to create good. The God of Israel can and does use imperfect people, people like you and me, to accomplish his purposes. Though in some cases these individuals suffered the earthly consequences of their actions, it does not diminish the fact that God redeemed their lives, redeemed their situations, turned it to good, and he can turn your life around too, if you'll let him. Next is a list of some of Israel's kings, so let's go on. And to Solomon was born Rehoboam, and to Rehoboam, Abiah, and to Abiah, Asa. To Asa was born Jehoshaphat, and to Jehoshaphat, Joram, and to Joram, Uzziah. To Uzziah was born Jotham, and to Jotham, Ahaz, and to Ahaz, Hezekiah. And to Hezekiah was born Manasseh, to Manasseh, Amon, and to Amon, Josiah. And to Josiah were born Jeconiah and his brothers at the time of the deportation to Babylon. Now, do you see the problem here? Our Wednesday night Bible study folks see the problem because we were just talking about it. There's a problem here. It's Jeconiah, otherwise known as Jehoiakim or Coniah, a wicked king who lived during the time of the Babylonian invasion, a contemptible man who sold his people out and was cursed by God to the effect that not one of his descendants would ever rule on the throne of David. And by the way, if you're taking notes, it's Jeremiah 22. As I live, declares the Lord, even though Coniah, the son of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, even if he were a signet ring on my right hand, yet I would pull you off. Oh, land, 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 hear the word of the Lord. Thus says the Lord, write this man down childless, a man who will not prosper in his days, for no man of his descendants will prosper, sitting on the throne of David or ruling again in Judah. Matthew declares what anyone investigating Yeshua's genealogy would have eventually come upon, Jeconiah. And I'm thinking, didn't Matthew know about this curse? Of course he did. How then does he reconcile a curse on the line of this wicked king with the fact that Yeshua is descended from him? And by the way, I want you to take comfort in something. You know, first of all, this was shown to me at a time I didn't know the answer, and it bothered me tremendously. As far as I was concerned, seeing that and not knowing the resolution, I thought, Jesus can't possibly be the Messiah if Matthew actually tells us that he's descended from Jeconiah. By the way, the first line of attack of the Pharisees and the chief priests and the scribes, who seemed to be just beside themselves trying to discredit Yeshua, their first line of attack would have been his genealogy. Did you notice that the Gospels are completely silent in terms of any objection raised on the part of his genealogy? So not only did Matthew know about the Jeconia curse, so did all the scribes, teachers of the law, all the Pharisees, and the chief priests. They all knew about this curse, didn't seem to bother them. And they were looking for something to bother them. Well, how is it? How can we have him as Messiah if there's this curse? Well, the answer and resolution comes to us from a prophecy in the book Haggai. And here's what God says. "But now be strong, O Zerubbabel, declares Adonai, for I am with you. On that day, declares the Lord of hosts, I will take you, Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, my servant, declares the Lord, and I will make you like a signet ring, for I have chosen you, declares the Lord of hosts." Whereas God had described Jehoiakim as a signet ring he would pull off his hand, to Zerubbabel, Jehoiakim's descendant, the Lord promised to treat him like a cherished signet ring. How is this possible? The answer is found in the forgiving and redeeming nature of God. True, Jehoiakim was cursed. God's word was fulfilled, but God, in his time and by his rightful authority, lifted the curse on that family line. Haggai chapter 3. He describes Zerubbabel as a chosen servant. So the same Lord of righteousness and holiness is also the God of mercy and forgiveness. He graciously restored the line of David. Well, here's the last section of Messiah's genealogy. "And after the deportation to Babylon, to Jeconia was born Shealtiel, to Shealtiel Zerubbabel, and to Zerubbabel was born Aviud, to Aviud Eliakim, to Eliakim Azor, and to Azor was born Tzadok, and to Tzadok Achim, to Achim Eliud, and to Eliud was born Eliezer, and to Eliezer Matan, and to Matan Yaakov, and to Yaakov was born Joseph," or Yosef, "the husband of Mary, by whom was born Yeshua, who was called the Messiah." Now, in this list of kings and their descendants, there are several about whom we know very little, other than their mention here. One thing that does stand out is that it does not say to Joseph was born Yeshua. Later in his book, Matthew will make the case for the divine origin and the virgin birth of the Messiah. Nevertheless, Yeshua is the legal heir of Joseph and therefore entitled by that genealogy to sit on the throne of David. So in conclusion, several points, well, really we're just going to talk three points, come out in Yeshua's genealogy recorded here in Matthew. First, Matthew makes it clear that Yeshua is the divine, virgin-born, prophetically announced Messiah, legally entitled to sit on David's throne. Second, there is universality to the good news about Yeshua. It is good news for Jew and Gentile alike. Messiah's own genealogy has both Jewish and non-Jewish members to it. And God continues to redeem people from all nations. And third, our Redeemer God can use imperfect people like them and like you and like me to accomplish his purposes. God can redeem even the most troubled, questionable circumstances and turn them around for good and to his glory. Ordinary, even flawed human beings, so prone to err, can be used by God to do wonderful things. If you think that you're beyond the scope of God's redemptive power, if you're thinking, I've just done too many bad things, you're wrong. I encourage you to take the message of this scandalous genealogy to heart. Consider those whose lives Adonai turned around and who ultimately were privileged to be part of Messiah's ancestry. So whoever you are, wherever you've been, you are within God's reach. You have only to turn to him and be embraced in his love and his forgiveness.